Welcome to Crossroads. New tariffs are expected to be announced against the Chinese Communist Party within around 2 weeks. Now, it's expected to encompass a long list of products from electric vehicles to chips to medical devices, maybe others as well. Reuters is saying the U.S. Trade Representative's office said on Tuesday that some of the steep U.S. tariffs increases on an array of Chinese imports, including electric vehicles and their batteries, computer chips, and medical products, will be delayed by at least 2 weeks. And it's a USTR said in May those tariffs would take effect on August 1st. We just passed it. But the office said it is still reviewing 1,100 comments received and now expects to issue a final determination in August, so soon. And it's the office added the new tariffs will take effect approximately 2 weeks after the final determination is released, and that President Joe Biden in May opted to keep tariffs put in place by his Republican predecessor, Donald Trump, while ratcheting up others, including a quadrupling of import duties on Chinese EVs to over 100% and doubling semiconductor duties to 50%. Now, remember, part of this is about just, you know, existing tariffs, the stuff that started under Donald Trump. But there are other key parts, like the Chinese Communist Party enabling Russia's war, the increased, you know, CCP military threats, and also the Chinese Communist Party openly trying to push the United States out of its markets. You know, again, a lot of these tariffs started when the U.S. started a trade war with the Chinese Communist Party. The context was, you know, back in 2019, 2018, right around then, Donald Trump was trying to make a trade deal with the CCP. And then COVID happened. COVID outbreak, of course, spread around the world. The CCP had wolf warrior diplomacy. They were attacking other countries, you know, in terms of trade, like punishments, like Australia and so on. And of course, that started a deeper trade war. The tariffs and the punishments against the Chinese Communist Party put in place at that time were then maintained under Joe Biden. Joe Biden then expanded several of those, as we discussed some of them. But what we're seeing now is that the CCP, rather than pulling back, they've actually gotten more aggressive. And now it's come to the point where, for example, the CCP's economy and its ability to, you know, prop up Russia is what's causing the war in Ukraine. The CCP, using trade, is trying to actively undermine the United States among its allies. The Chinese Communist Party is increasing its military threats. And given this, of course, you know, the big weak point for the CCP right now is not necessarily challenging it militarily, because we're not that far yet. It's on the business side. And so given these factors, the issues that led to the tariffs to be put in place in the first place have significantly increased from when they were first introduced. And so we're very likely to watch even deeper tariffs this time around. Now, look, the Chinese Communist Party's recent incursions into the air defense zone of Alaska, that's important. Because when the CCP did that, while, of course, you know, still trying to make friendly gestures elsewhere, trying to be the peace broker between Russia and Ukraine, making deals with the, you know, the Gaza Strip factions and so on, when it made those incursions into the Alaskan air defense zone, it was giving a direct threat to the United States using what could be, you know, nuclear-capable bombers. And these direct threats against the United States, you know, really could impact the decisions being made right now on how much deeper, possibly, these tariffs should go. Also, look, the Chinese Communist Party is trying to dump products from excess manufacturing on markets, and this has the potential to destroy some of these markets. Remember, also, the European Union is talking about tariffs and also sanctions, notably against the Chinese Communist Party. Sanctions being, of course, mostly in response to the CCP being deemed the key enabler of Russia's war in Ukraine. But the tariffs also just being on the fact that because the CCP has excess manufacturing, they need to get rid of that. If they dump it onto a market, it's going to cause a price drop in the market, and it has the potential to destroy some of the local industries. And so the tariffs are necessary for the survival of some of these industries. That is the policy and the trend right now. And so the excess markets in China will also very likely be taken into consideration with this. When NATO determined that the Chinese Communist Party is the key enabler of Russia's ability to continue its war in Ukraine, That is also important. Because what's happening right now as well, the CCP has a dueling peace deal for Ukraine that opposes the U.S.-led and kind of international order peace deal for Ukraine. If, you know, Volodymyr Zelensky accepts the peace deal on the CCP's side, that means that Russia and the Chinese Communist Party get what they wanted out of this, essentially. And right now is a key time because it looks like they really want to end this war. The sanctions or tariffs or whatever they choose to do at this time, that could be one of the decisive factors that affects this. Now, look, I mentioned how this relates to the, you know, Russia and Ukraine. The key to ending the war, again, is not just on giving war funds to Ukraine. The U.S. has been backing Ukraine in the war. The key to ending the war right now, to disarming Russia, to bringing them to the, you know, the negotiating table, is disabling the CCP's economy to the extent that the regime can no longer afford to keep the war going on its end. The CCP is the weak link, in other words, and its economy in particular, to end the war. China has become a vital partner for Russia. However, China has been accused of building up Moscow's war machine by providing critical components. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, you know, he pointed out as much in a recent interview. Watch.
What China is doing, or what some of its enterprises are doing, is to provide critical components for Russia's defense industrial base. Things like machine tools, microelectronics, and optics. Those are being used to help Russia on what's an extraordinary crash course effort to make more munitions, tanks, armored vehicles, missiles. And the actions that Russia's taken are going at a pace unlike any we've seen in its modern history, including the Soviet Union during the Cold War. And this could not be happening without the support that China's providing. We've taken action already against Chinese entities that are engaged in this. And what I made clear today is that if China won't act, we will.
Now, on this note, the timing right now is extremely important. The United States is basically in a race right now to the finish line against the Chinese Communist Party. And in Ukraine, you know, President Volodymyr Zelensky is kind of caught in the middle of this. He's trying to get a peace deal with the U.S. and this side. He's also negotiating with the Chinese Communist Party right now to try to get them to end the war on their side. And the reason he's going to China for these talks is because the CCP, again, is the enabling factor on Russia's side. And because of this, he's going to China for talks on ending the war because he believes they can do it if they just stop supporting it. Now, Reuters stated this. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said on Wednesday that Kyiv does not want China to act as a mediator in its 29-month-old conflict with Russia, but hoped Beijing would apply greater pressure on Moscow to end the war. Because again, their economy is what's propping it up. And notes that Zelensky, speaking to French media outlets, also said that while Ukraine insisted on restoring its 1991 post-Soviet borders, it would consider opening talks with Russia before all of Moscow's troops were withdrawn if the conditions were right. And he said, quote, if China wants to, it can force Russia to stop this war. I do not want China to act as a mediator. I would like it to put pressure on Russia to put an end to this war. And he said that just as the United States is applying pressure, just as the European Union is applying pressure, the more influence a country has, the greater should be its pressure on Russia. And again, look, the timing with this and the new incoming tariffs in China are important because those tariffs, rather than, you know, the CCP's terms for negotiations, the tariffs could put pressure on Russia because they could disable the parts of the Chinese economy that give it that authority and that power. Remember also, the United States seems to be very much aware of the role the CCP is playing in the war. AP said this, China has surged sales to Russia of machine tools, microelectronics, and other technology that Moscow in turn is using to produce missiles, tanks, aircraft, and other weaponry for its war against Ukraine, according to a U.S. assessment. It says that two senior Biden administration officials who discussed the sensitive findings in April 12th on the condition of anonymity said that in 2023, about 90% of Russia's microelectronics came from China, which Russia has used to make missiles, tanks, and aircraft. It states that nearly 70% of Russia's approximately $900 million in machine tool imports in the last quarter of 2023 came from China. And again, given the fact that they have identified the elements that are supporting Russia's war, those could become targets. But actually, of course, just disabling those wouldn't technically deal with the whole thing, because this is trade between China and Russia, not trade between China and the United States or with Europe. If they want to actually impact this with tariffs, it's not really possible. They probably need sanctions. And the sanctions more than likely would be through the banks. They would have to go through other means to impact it or damage the CCP's economy to the extent that it could no longer sustain that support. Now, the general assessment is that the CCP is doing this for its own reasons. The Chinese Communist Party is offering a competing peace deal between Russia and Ukraine, but on the CCP's own terms. And remember, as we've discussed before on the show, the CCP's agenda right now within Europe and within the Middle East and within Asia is this whole idea of a Eurasian empire. It's based on this idea, this strategy, that whoever dominates Eurasia dominates the world. And if the CCP can reinvigorate, you know, the former Soviet Union and reinvigorate the Soviet influence over a lot of the Muslim world and reinvigorate the Soviet influence over a lot of the Asian region, and the CCP then unites that with new trade deals and so on, the CCP will then have that power. Ukraine is one of the big key pieces to this. And of course, that ties in with Russia's interests, but the CCP, again, inserting itself into these peace deals, has said, in its own words, that it wants this to have to be something that serves the interests of China. They have their own skin in the game. And remember also, the peace deal in the CCP's terms should be taken in context of the other actions the regime is making elsewhere, including, again, with its pushing of the Hamas side of the war in Gaza, which is very likely going to draw that war out. But by doing so is, you know, kind of galvanizing a lot of these more extremist countries on the side of the Chinese Communist Party. And with the recent Israeli airstrikes against Hamas and Hezbollah targets, including within Iran, the CCP is putting itself on the other side of that conflict against the United States and notably against Israel, but in such a way that Israel may have to go to China if they want to have a peace deal. They want to bring an end to this. And so as that war is expanding, the CCP is putting itself in such a position that it is drawing it out while making sure that it benefits from it in the long term. Now look, in other news, the pensions of many U.S. government employees, they're still invested in China. But that's actually right now finally starting to change. I'll be talking more about this after we come back from a quick break. Welcome back. The pensions of many U.S. government employees are in China. Now, that's actually finally starting to change, and this could actually be gearing up right now, not just for upcoming tariffs on the CCP, which could impact the Chinese economy, but also on projections that the Chinese economy is in serious decline. People are taking their money out. The Epoch Times said that several states are divesting their public pension funds from China amid growing public distrust of the regime in Beijing, although billions of retirement dollars remain invested in the communist nation. It notes that 42 states have at least one public pension fund invested in China or Hong Kong, which again the CCP forcibly took over, according to the Rubicon Report from Future Union, a nonprofit group headed by venture capitalist Andrew King. It states five states, Florida, Missouri, Indiana, Kansas, and Oklahoma, are divesting at least $1.2 billion in pension funds from China. In Illinois, legislation has been introduced to divest from adversarial nations. Arizona's governor has vetoed a similar measure, and we see this now continuing as a trend. Now, we're also seeing similar moves, notably with hedge funds. Reuters said, global hedge funds have trimmed their exposure to Chinese equities to the lowest in 5 years while ramping up investment in Japan, Goldman Sachs said in a note to clients. It says the retreat highlights investors' deep-seated concerns about China's economy. Chinese shares are nearly flat this year, as early gains betting a rally fizzled owing to a disappointment over policy measures to revive a flagging economy. Again, during the third plenum, the CCP was expected to announce the big plan to save the Chinese economy. They had a lot of high talk, but nothing tangible. And they also warned about, you know, pain to come, suggesting that really for the next maybe 10 years or longer, they just expect things to get bad. But a note that selling an emerging market stock last month was led by China, with mainland A shares dominating the outflows, according to a Goldman Sachs Prime Service Team report this week. And as a result, it says hedge funds' net allocation to China, including investments in onshore and offshore Chinese equities, fell to the lowest level in 5 years, they said. But they note, in contrast, allocations to Japan climbed to four-year highs by the end of July. Now, with this, of course, this suggests that it's not just based on strategy. It's not just based on concerns over adversarial nations, like some of these different states pulling pensions out of China are talking about. It's also just because of the basic kind of financial issues at hand and just basic, you know, investor interests. If the hedge funds are pulling the money out of China, they're probably not doing it out of like moral reasons, usually not. They're doing it out of financial reasons. They're doing it because they think they're going to lose money if they're there. And that's based on, I think, stuff we're watching on the surface. Part of that, yes, does tie into the adversarial relationship, where the Chinese Communist Party is threatening many Western countries, many Asian countries, and of course also increasing a lot of these threats, including with recently flying bombers into the air defense zone of Alaska. Given that situation and the CCP's increased threats, impending tariffs, and also the talk of sanctions against the CCP, both in Europe and within the United States, the Chinese economy, based on the security element alone, could be impacted by political moves. But even aside from the political side, even when it just comes to the state of the Chinese economy itself, it does not have a clear roadmap to actually fix the problems that are currently leading to the crumbling of its economy. And investors are looking at these things, and they're pulling their money out. And notably, as they pull their money out, that is causing the problem to become worse in China. It's going to make it start spiraling. Because as it gets increasingly worse, as people pull their money out, and as the different methods it has tried to impose fail, which they have been, as that takes place, it's going to be less and less viable to have your money there. Now, there are other things as well happening. Now, we talked before about Temu and Shein, right? These are these big Chinese e-commerce websites trying to compete with Amazon, and they're doing it through a lot of kind of gray zone tactics. Using things to get around paying duties, going directly from Chinese factories to American consumers, and using a lot of kind of very odd tactics that maybe are questionably legal. Well, Temu is now facing pressure not just outside of China, but also within China. Bloomberg said that hundreds of merchants staged a rally at PDD Holdings, Inc., their offices in southern China this week, protesting what they called unfair penalties that Temu's owner, that company, is increasingly levying. And the protest was the culmination of growing frustration among merchants and third-party sellers who feel that this top-level company, PDD, is increasingly squeezing them for revenues as it embarks on a costly global expansion. And notes their complaint center on PDD's practice of withholding payments to merchants who are judged to have fallen short on customer expectations, the people said. And that includes anything from missing delivery deadlines to mismatched product listings. It says those penalties or fines have risen sharply in recent months, often without a clear explanation, they said. PDD or Temu typically either withhold payments for products already sold or levy a fine of several times the retail prices. Some say it's even, you know, five times what they charge, like the fine for it if there are problems. And of course, that money goes in these Chinese factories. Now look, this is kind of to be expected. U.S. companies, American companies, a lot of Americans may not know this, but globally, what they're known for is good service. You know, things like being able to return a product just because you don't like it. That is not what's normal in most of the world. Most of the world, if you buy a product and you don't like it and you bring it back to try to return it, they're going to point you to the door and tell you to go walk through it. They're not going to give you a refund. They're not going to take it back. They're going to show you to the exit. American companies have this type of service. And American companies maintain that as kind of one of the things that make us actually pretty viable for a lot of the world. But again, that's not normal. For a country like China to try to compete with that is going to be very difficult because, you know, you need a lot of infrastructure. You need a lot of, you know, factories and warehouses. You need a lot of things to hold products in different areas and the ability to quickly replace things if problems come up. But the problem you have with Temu and Shein and these websites is that a lot of them go directly from factory to consumer, and notably all the way in China where the factories are. For them to just return it, you have to like ship it all the way back to China, right? They cut out the middlemen. That's kind of how their whole system works. And like the other side, you know, with Amazon, for example, a lot of costs on returns or contested payments, they end up actually going to the vendors. This is actually not on Amazon itself, typically. And this is also something not widely known. If, for example, you buy a product on Amazon and you want to return it or you contest the payment, a lot of times the costs are not shouldered by Amazon. The costs are shouldered by the company that sold the product using their platform. And so if, for example, you buy a computer or you buy a shirt or something like that, and it doesn't arrive, for example, maybe there were problems in shipping, maybe someone stole your package, you know, both are issues, and you go to your bank and you contest the payment, well, you don't have to pay for it, but then the contesting of the payment goes to the seller. Now, under normal circumstances, if you buy a product from like a local store in your neighborhood and you contest a payment, they can actually come after you and contest it with you. But oftentimes with these big platforms, that's very difficult. And so this type of customer service that exists, it's tied in with the banking system. It's tied in with the laws of this country. It's tied in with a lot of other infrastructure we have that allow for these types of things to happen. Customer service. China doesn't really have that. And so with Temu facing these problems now, one of their big issues is also that products are coming all the way from China. They cut the prices on shipping, you know, by cutting out the middlemen, and then, of course, using various means to bypass different charges and shipping costs and duties and things like that. So the price on our side is kind of unrealistically low, but it also looks like they sell at a loss even despite that because they're trying to grow globally. So what happens then? If the vendors in China need to shoulder those costs here or in other countries, because there's a lot of them, when there are issues, then that really hits them hard because it's taking a company that works on a lot of gray zone tactics to cut costs, and that puts all the actual costs when there are problems on the manufacturers, you know, whenever something comes up. And that's going to be a lot of money, especially when you're dealing with a global company of that size and you're dealing with, you know, customer service on a global level, and anytime there's an issue, you're shouldering the cost. This is likely going to be one of the big, big pieces of that big Jenga tower getting pulled out right from under it, because it's going to be difficult for that form of business model they have with this to sustain itself if they have to deal with this. But the other issue is, again, if they're going to be doing business in America, and if they're going to be doing business in parts of Europe, and business in a lot of other countries, and most importantly, if they want to compete with Amazon, then they need to have competing policies. They need to have things in place to make sure that when issues with customer service comes up, that they can resolve them. And so this is a necessary component to that business strategy if they want to compete with Amazon. And that necessary component is running into serious problems. Now look, on another note, things are not looking so good for the Chinese economy in general. Remember, the Chinese Communist Party, they just held top-level meetings on how to fix its economy. This was the third plenum, and then the top CCP leadership also met at the Politburo. The problem is, they didn't really lay out a plan. Not only did they not lay out a plan, they didn't even suggest that they were going to fix things. They basically said, kind of warned people, things will likely get progressively worse, and they want to focus on domestic production, things like this, but a lot of the programs they announced, they had actually already been doing. And the things they'd already been doing were already failing. Now, the CCP doesn't seem to be changing much. In fact, even though it's paying lip service to peace, for example, it's getting more aggressive. And even though it's paying lip service to fixing the real estate market, it's not doing anything that it wasn't already doing that was already failing. With this said, the regime is now sending a message to people in China to get ready to face some pain. CNBC said China is not planning additional stimulus for the second half of the year, according to officials from the Economic Planning Agency and Finance Ministry. This is important because one of the ways the CCP's economy works is that the CCP just continually pours money into it. A lot of that used to happen through loans, which is why, again, they have a debt crisis right now. A lot of that used to happen through financing the mega projects, the ghost cities, and the roads to nowhere. That got money flowing within the economy. That created the illusion of economic growth, and that illusion of economic growth made all these Western investors pour money into China, which paid them off, almost like a Ponzi scheme type thing, right? And so given that whole system is kind of breaking down now and investors are pulling their money out, the CCP is finding its banking crisis has reached the very edges of its bubble, and they can't keep doing this. Now, they were suggesting with the third plenum that, you know, one of the methods they were going to have is just basically just pushing money into the system. Now they're walking that back, it seems, at least in some ways, and they're telling people, get ready to feel some pain. It says that when asked this week about stimulus plans for the second half of the year, officials affirmed existing measures and emphasized longer-term goals to develop advanced technology and other new growth drivers. It notes the economy faces challenge not only from the external environment, tariffs and sanctions, but also from structural transformation. Now look, given all of this, Zhao Chenxin, the deputy director of the National Development and Reform Commission in China, told reporters that, quote, this will be pain that must be experienced in the process of pushing for high-quality development. Now, the problem with the whole high-quality development thing is that's also running into problems. The Chinese plan, right, when it came to their older economic plans, because they do 5-year plans, they do 15-year plans, they do longer plans. The old plan was Project 863, and that was a plan to basically move the Chinese economy from cheap manufacturing, all the cheap goods, to a high-tech and, you know, kind of first-world type manufacturing. They wanted to go after new materials. They wanted to go after, higher electronics. They wanted to get into kind of first-world development. And that, of course, has run into problems because, well, it started causing issues with economic theft. It started resulting in their cyber attacks and their system to just steal these things from other countries. They weren't really developing it. They were stealing it. Then they announced the kind of add-on project to Project 863, which was China 2025. And China 2025 was ran into some controversy in the West, actually, because it openly included components to try to, you know, surpass the West, to push the U.S. out of the position of world leader. It was basically like a publicly announced program that the CCP wanted to dominate the world, and it was also deemed a program that would direct the CCP to conduct even more theft, that they would have to steal these things from other countries. Now, what happened, though, is that because the CCP started again subsidizing different industries, electric vehicles, solar panels, all these products, a lot of the manufacturing base in China shifted focus to medicine, EVs, different products, which now they have excess of. They have too many of them. And because of that, a lot of countries, again, European Union, the United States, and others, they're putting pressure on the CCP because they're saying, hey, if you dump these at cheap prices, you're going to destroy our industries, and we're not going to let you do it. And also, as the CCP becomes, you know, hyper-aggressive, which they are right now, they're seen as a threat with this, and it looks like they're waging a type of business war. Countries are waking up, and they're not letting it happen. And so even this whole plan of this high-tech manufacturing, that's running into issues. Not to mention the fact that some of the enabling factors with that, you know, semiconductors being a big one, is also being cut off for the CCP. Now look, again, the CCP is posting economic numbers that don't seem to reflect reality. They seem to be lying about economic growth with the intent of trying to make things look better than they actually are because they don't want to lose foreign investment. They need money from outside China. They need business from outside China. Their programs internally, you know, real estate used to be about a third of their economy, manufacturing about another third, and then other things about the rest of that. They're all running into problems. They're making it so there's massive censorship programs, making sure that people outside China don't even hear what's happening, while at the same time they're saying, hey, everything's fine and dandy, kind of. There are some problems, but we're fixing them, but hey, still pour your money in. And people aren't doing it. They're taking their money out. All signs within China, these factors and others, not to mention, again, the potential of destructive tariffs and destructive sanctions, all signs are pointing right now to the economy in China getting worse. And look, even outside China, as we mentioned, the new tariffs, and not just about the United States, but also from the European Union, these are expected soon. And not to mention also the Chinese Communist Party is getting into new conflicts with its neighbors. In fact, look, aside from Japan, Australia, and other countries which have increased tensions with the CCP, especially in the Asia Pacific, there's also Taiwan now. Now, of course, look, remember, Taiwan is, of course, being threatened by the Chinese Communist Party. The Chinese Communist Party is threatening to take over their entire island nation through military force. But they're also big trading partners. And so there's kind of a bit of a two-faced relationship, which you find in a lot of areas. There's business on one side, there's security on the other. The business guys do business to make profits. The security guys are looking at the security side. And they don't really see eye to eye with each other under normal circumstances. And so in Taiwan, a lot of the businesses are looking to trade. But that trade now is also running into problems because, look, while the CCP is trying to lure in Taiwanese business, they also need it. The CCP also recently threatened to kill people, to literally execute them, if they support Taiwanese independence. And that makes it awkward if you're Taiwanese and you say, yeah, Taiwan's a country, and you want to do business with China, because that puts your head on the chopping block. Business Insider said this: China on Wednesday sought to assure Taiwanese employees working in the mainland, saying its recently announced punishments for, quote, separatists don't apply to them if they, quote, don't break the law. And that's complicated because breaking the law could be something like you saying, I support Taiwanese independence. And notes the comment comes as Beijing issues legal guidelines on June 21st suggesting the death penalty or prison for Taiwan independence diehards. It says the declaration sparked alarm in Taiwan, where officials started restricting tours to China and warning people against traveling to the mainland. But China's Taiwan Affairs Office has since repeatedly said the punishments only apply to a very small number of independence supporters and accused Taiwan of fueling overblown fears of imprisonment or execution. Now, look, I'd say it's kind of hard to get people to do business with you if you're threatening to kill them at the same time. You know, that could make the relationship a little bit awkward. If the CCP is saying, hey, Taiwanese businessmen, come to China, but by the way, if you break our law, i.e. say that Taiwan is a country, you might be arrested and executed, right? I don't think a lot of people are going to want that. But look, this approach from the CCP, you know, wanting business deals on one side, but threatening and harassing countries on the other, it's doing this almost across the world right now. This is like the new CCP way of doing things. And it's breaking that old dichotomy I discussed, where normally business is business and security is security. The old way of doing things was that if you're an investor, if you're running a big company and you want to do business with China, yeah, you know there are issues on the security side, but you don't think that these things are going to affect you. And on the security side, you know, of course, they're looking at military, they're looking at spies, they're looking at threats, but they're not really thinking so much about the business side. Because the CCP has integrated business and security, though, even arresting foreign business leaders, charging them as spies, going after them, searching them, threatening to kill them, this is merging those two sides in ways they were not merged before. And also in light of tariffs and sanctions and so on, business leaders need to now take into account the side they used to not think about, because this side now is impacting them. But look, back to Taiwan, they're actually really starting to call it out. The Guardian said that China's attempts to stop foreign parliamentarians from attending a summit in Taiwan were, quote, massively overstepping acts of bullying, the organizer said at the end of the gathering that saw the group designated to counter China expand. Basically, what happened, there was a big meeting held in Taiwan. Taiwan wanted to have discussions with lawmakers from many countries around the world. Many of them traveled there. And when they traveled there to be part of these talks, you know, kind of discussing possible threats in the CCP started threatening the lawmakers, calling them, messaging them, urging them to not go. And it kind of had the opposite effect, as you might suspect. It says the Inter-Parliamentary Alliance on China, IPAC, held its fourth annual summit in Taipei and Taiwan this week, attended by about 50 parliamentarians from 23 countries. It notes that one of these individuals, Luke de Pulford, executive director of IPAC, said that some had received calls or demands for meetings scheduled the same time of the summit to, quote, express to them why they shouldn't wade into the Taiwan question, which is how the CCP defines this. Or it says they were offered trips to China instead, as if they could be bought off. It says that de Pulford said Beijing had only targeted countries, quote, where they thought they could bully them. It says further, and the Chinese ambassadors have called IPAC members in the past to demand that they remove their signatures from communiques, and they had also been sanctioned or targeted by Chinese cyber attacks. One of these individuals, Miriam Legsman, a Slovak member of the European Parliament, said she was among those targeted by local Chinese diplomatic officials. And she said, quote, I was born into communist Czechoslovakia, and I remember this kind of behavior when my relatives were called to Communist Party headquarters for intimidation and questions because they wanted to travel abroad, or had concerns about the communist regime, she said during the summit. Now, given the situation, again, politics, business, they used to be separate. Security, politics, business, they used to be kind of separate. Diplomacy used to not have to deal with these things. The CCP is merging them all together. And it's causing people to now be concerned about their safety, about threats, about other things, based on them just doing their jobs. And look, if you're going to a meeting discussing whether the Chinese Communist Party is becoming a warmonger or aggressive, and you want to have that discussion, are they really as bad as they say they are? And the CCP threatens you or tries to bribe you to not be part of that discussion, what do you think your conclusion is going to be? It's having the opposite effect. The CCP, again, they're doing this almost across the board right now. It's a schizophrenic system. You know, we're the peacekeepers on one side while they threaten to kill you or whatever else on the other side. And look, remember, with that recent incident, the CCP was trying to pressure lawmakers in other countries to not go to Taiwan for this meeting. And this type of two-faced rhetoric is becoming a real issue for it. It's trying to make this big push for international business. It's trying to lure investors back to China. But it's doing this while being extremely aggressive, and it's backfiring. And look, of course, this goes back to the upcoming tariffs that we discussed. With around 2 weeks, you know, we'll see how long it takes, the United States is going to be releasing new tariffs on China. Some of those tariffs will likely just be renewals of what started under the Trump administration, but it's also likely they are going to expand. And a key reason for the likely expansion is all the issues we've been discussing. The growing hostilities from the Chinese Communist Party. Every time it threatens someone, every time it does something hostile, every time it intervenes in peace deals, it adds one extra little layer of considerations to those tariffs. The regime right now, it's trying to grow its business, it's trying to save its economy. But while it's failing internally, it's making threats and becoming hyper-aggressive externally. The Chinese economy is the weakest link in the CCP's power, especially right now. And if other countries wanted to disable the CCP war machine as it's turning up the volume on that and diffuse the threats that it's making, they're very likely going to target the weakest link, and that is the CCP's failing economy. In other words, look, the regime's tactics, they are very likely going to backfire. Well, everyone, that's all for today. Thank you for joining us. Let me know what you think of the comments about possible tariffs and what that might include. Also, please don't forget to share this episode. It helps get the word out. And as always, please take care of yourselves, stay informed, and stay free. Thank you.